Hello and welcome to the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I am chair of the Couple and Family Therapy Program at Antioch University, Seattle, and I'm also a licensed therapist. Today it's just me. It's a continuation of the daily podcast for our pledge drive in January. So if you want to become a patron of the podcast, please do so. We are up to over 200 patrons, and that is awesome. That's super cool. For the 200 people who have become patrons, we love you so much. If you haven't become a patron yet, please do so soon. We want to probably get another 200-ish, and then we will reach our goal probably, in which we can start paying the co-hosts a respectable amount of income so that they can be compensated for their time on the podcast. Because up until this point, we've all been basically doing it for free for the past 8 years, maybe even paying money to do this because there is some amount of money that needs to be invested in technology and that kind of thing. And so we're trying to take this podcast to the next level, perhaps making daily podcasts like we have been this month. And in order to do that, we need more people to become patrons. And if things continue the way that they have been, then we'll be good after a few months. So please, if you haven't yet, go to your computer and become a patron of the podcast. Today, I just spent some time, incidentally, on another podcast called Everything is Awesome. It was a wonderful time. Check out their podcast called Everything is Awesome. It's a local podcast led by Jeff. And I was interviewed, and we had a long talk. Jeff and Amber, they came to the university, and we sat in my office at the university, and we talked about all sorts of stuff, so that was fun. Today, I thought I would just read some emails. For instance, a patron wrote in and wrote regarding our microaggression podcast, which we did last week-ish. The patron says, "Wow, the subject has been on my mind because recently I wrote an email to my former therapist. I wrote to her about using the word Oriental. I was kind, I didn't call her names, but I'm left wondering whether I had any impact on her." So just jumping in here. So again, this patron is writing in and wishes to remain anonymous. She's writing in regarding the microaggression podcast, in which we talked extensively about microaggressions. And this patron is saying that her therapist used the word Oriental, which I have to say is quite surprising, given that that name has been out of fashion for a very long time. The preferred word now is Asian or Pacific Islander or just simply Chinese American or Japanese American or whatever. There's lots of different terms, but Oriental is definitely not one of them. Having said that, some of my Asian relatives, my Japanese-American relatives, actually use the word Oriental, particularly the older relatives. So they are full Japanese-American. I'm half. These are full Japanese-American relatives of mine, and they use the word Oriental, and they don't have any problem with it. So it's not like certain words that are always a bad thing when we use them. You could probably think of some other racial slurs that are used against other groups or even Asians for that matter that are never considered a good thing. But for whatever reason, the word Oriental never became a terrible, terrible insult. It just became one of those words that fell out of fashion. It's sort of like Negro or something. You wouldn't say the word Negro is a terrible insult, but definitely isn't the preferred word anymore. And so, but you still see it in organizations because they were named way back when and they still retain that name. So I think Oriental is one of those words. Having said that, if you're just a regular old person and you're using the word Oriental and you don't know any better, then, well, you know, we can say that that's a certain level of ignorance. But if a therapist is using the word Oriental to around an Asian client, I have to say that's quite shocking. Therapists should be up to date on these sorts of things because particularly if you're practicing on the West Coast, which this therapist is, there's a lot of Asians around, and you ought to know that Oriental has fallen out of fashion. At the very least, you should be seeking out this information to make sure you're up to date. All right, so going on with your email. I have had these sorts of experiences with almost all of my therapists in one form or another. I don't think I'm able to quite get there on the trust issue because I feel so betrayed on a fundamental level. So just jumping in here. So these microaggressions or these mistakes or these lack of understandings or these ignorances, they are harmful to the relationship with the client potentially. And we all know, according to research and according to anecdotal evidence, that the relationship is the most important thing and the most important factor when determining outcomes of therapy. And so therapists really should know what the deal is there and know how to navigate that. Are there things as a therapist you're going to be ignorant about? Absolutely. But you should have a certain level of wisdom or an approach to engaging in conversations with clients that can not result in relationship ruptures such as the one that this patron is talking about. For instance, say someone is from, I don't know, Palestine or something, and you don't know what to call them. Is it Palestinian? Is it some other word? Maybe you're just ignorant of that, and that's fine. It's okay to be ignorant of something, but you should try to learn about it. But it's also okay just to ask and just say, you know what, I have to apologize. I am completely ignorant of Palestinian culture and the words that we should be using. So let me know what I should be saying and how you want me to talk about this. Do you want to talk about this? Do you want to talk about your culture? Are there elements of what we're talking about that are cultural that I need to understand, differences between my culture being a, for instance, you know, for me, Kirk, I'm half Japanese and half Japanese American, half European American. And me and my recent ancestors have lived in the Seattle area for over 100 years. So that's going to make me potentially ignorant of some things. And so, you know, let me know if you'd like to talk about that. So I don't know if that particular, you know, for instance, would work with every client, but I hope you get my drift here. All right, getting back to the email. My former therapist I mentioned above on our first meeting pointed out that the director of the clinic was Korean. My thought was, is this supposed to make me feel more comfortable? Because I'm not. Then I had another therapist who said she wasn't racist because she had a 9-year-old adopted Chinese daughter. Then another therapist pointed out at one of our first meetings that she had a Hawaiian-Korean friend and how I was like her friend, yet different too. So just jumping in here. These are just classic microaggressions and just classic ignorant people. Yeah, this is my former therapist I mentioned above on our first meeting pointed out that the director of the clinic was Korean. I mean, it's so silly. It's like, you know, you're a Korean person and you come into therapy and your therapist is uncomfortable. Your therapist is white. Your therapist is seemingly a little uncomfortable and says, oh, by the way, the director of the clinic is Korean. So that basically means that we're good, right? You're Korean and I'm, white American, European American. And so, and I know a Korean person, so we're good, right? It's just stupid, just ridiculous that a therapist would say that. And she says, then I had another therapist who said she wasn't racist because she had a 9-year-old adopted Chinese daughter. Again, this is ridiculous. You can certainly be racist if you had a 9-year-old adopted Chinese daughter. These are shortcuts that ignorant people try to use in order to prove that they're not racist or something. And I have to say, I have a bit of sympathy for white people because they're at a disadvantage. To a certain extent, they have to often prove that they're not racist. And that's a hard thing to do, especially when you're first meeting somebody. Being part Japanese, half Japanese myself, I probably get a lot of leeway with people. People see my face and probably just assume that I'm not racist and that I would understand them, at least in part, because I'm not fully white. But I am a male, so I'm at a potential disadvantage there when it comes to making an impression of being a feminist. So how does one prove that they're cool with Asians? That's a hard thing to do. Should you say that you know a Korean person or that you adopted a Chinese daughter? Is that the thing you should go to prove that you're cool with non-white people? I would say no. That doesn't seem likely to work. I actually knew someone. I won't say specifics because it'll identify him, but he was telling me, or he was actually telling a bunch of people all at once, that he was basically being accused of having racist thoughts, racist ideas. And he was a clinician, and he decided to try to prove, he was a white, older male, and he felt uncomfortable with that accusation and decided to come back by saying that he was married to an Asian woman. Therefore, he couldn't possibly be racist and couldn't possibly be ignorant of race and da-da-da. And boy, did that not go over well with the crowd that I was in. I was basically taking a side seat to this conversation. I was staying out of it. It was quite uncomfortable. But even among people that you would think would have a more advanced understanding of race and sexism and other isms and how to communicate about such things, you would think they would, and they don't, including therapists and other sorts of clinicians. And then, so it's gone. I think my marriage counselor left me feeling the worst. When I said that back in college, I took my husband home to meet my parents, the therapist assumed I meant Korea. So just jumping in here, yeah. I could see how this would be particularly harmful and hurtful to the patron, because you say, yeah, you're saying to your therapist, I went home to visit my parents. And it's just, if you're not white, it's assumed that you are going, that home, when you say home, you're talking about another country. And that can be particularly alienating, that someone would just assume that home is in another country just because you don't look like just because you're not white, just because you don't look like the stereotypical American. That can be particularly hurtful. Again, my dad, who's Japanese American, he did a lot of traveling for work, and when he was in, say, Dubai, he would do a lot of work in Dubai. And he looks Japanese. And so when the locals would talk to him, they would, talk to him, and he'd start talking back, and they'd go, oh, you have an American accent. And he says, yeah, I'm American. I'm Japanese American. And they were just astounded by that. The people in Dubai that my father talked to couldn't even imagine that there were Japanese people living in America, because to them, an American was a white person. To them, an American was Ronald Reagan and George Bush and these sorts of people. It wasn't a Japanese American guy. And I have to say, I suffered from that even myself. When I was in Mexico one time playing pool in a bar, I met some local Mexicans, and one of them was a Japanese Mexican guy. And he acted and talked exactly like a Mexican guy, but he had a Japanese face. In the same way that my dad has a Japanese face, but he acts and talks just like an American guy because he is American, just like that Japanese guy in Mexico was a Mexican, a Japanese person. So, it's understandable to some extent, but if you're a therapist, you should know better. You should know better than to make an assumption like that. And you should know better than to say something like that, because you know that things like that are going to hurt someone's feelings, and that's going to disrupt their relationship, and that's going to harm treatment. Okay, so just going on with your email here. I like all these people to varying degrees. They all have been trained to interact with people, and I suppose being likable is part of the profession. Jumping in here, yes, that's very true. Being likable is for most clinicians, for most therapists, an important part of their effectiveness as a therapist. You could call it bedside manner, you could call it rapport building, but in my form of therapy, the relationship between therapist and client is the primary thing that is used for change. And the better the relationship is, and the deeper and the more caring the vibe, the better the outcomes. All right, going on with their email here. I think it's empowering to acknowledge and talk about our experiences. If you have any thoughts on how to work with my not-so-culturally-aware therapists, please share them. Thank you. Well, I don't exactly know what to say because I'm not there, and it's hard for me to know exactly what's going on in the therapist's heads. You've certainly, patron, experienced a lot of microaggressions from therapists, which I find to be extremely unlucky. Now, I don't know if it's just the community you live in, but I imagine it's quite unlucky that you've run into so many ignorant therapists and so many therapists that don't know how to navigate these kinds of things. It's either unlucky or I just have a distorted vision of what my industry is like. Sometimes I'll run into therapists or other clinicians, and I'm astounded at how different they are from me, and how different they think, and how ignorant they are of some things. And then I realize, oh yeah, you know, like any other industry, you're going to have a wide variety of people, and not everyone thinks the same in our industry. Having said that, you're asking me, patron, what you could do to work with these not-so-culturally-aware therapists. I guess what I would do is I would just tell them how you feel. At the very least, you're helping them with the next client they work with. But at best, the therapists, in all likelihood, unless they're just truly terrible people, which is possible, but it doesn't seem like it. They seem, from your description, you're saying you like these people and they're just ignorant to certain things. Well, if they're nice people, then they'll listen to you and they'll understand that they hurt your feelings and they'll apologize. And those things happen. Therapists aren't perfect people, and mistakes can and do and are made. They do happen. So just tell your therapist how you feel, and it sounds like you've already kind of done that. It sounds like after the first few times it's happening with the next therapist, you're like, okay, I'm going to just tell the therapist about this. And then their reaction is bad because they say, oh, well, you know, don't worry about me because I have an adopted Chinese daughter. Feel free to follow that up and say, well, I don't want to be a jerk, but what you just said right there actually makes things worse. You know, because just because you've adopted a Chinese girl does not necessarily mean that I feel comfortable, and doesn't necessarily mean that you don't have some racist attitudes that are going to affect how you see me as an Asian American. Maybe you adopted this person because you feel sorry for Asians, and I don't want you to feel sorry for me. Maybe you consider yourself the great white savior of the earth, that you're better than non-white people and you can save the Korean children from their, you know, their crappy culture. So I don't know what your deal is. And so, you know, don't just say that. So I guess that's what I would say is just, I find that when I talk to people, a lot of people will say to me when I say stuff like this, actually someone just asked me today, someone was talking about having run from a therapist because of a conflict that happened. And I said, you know, if you wanted to, you could have just told your therapist that you were angry at him. You could have just told him that you're angry. And she said to me, she said, really? I could have, what do you mean? I could, you know, but wouldn't that have hurt his feelings? And it could have, but that's what therapy is all about. It's about being real. It's about processing real things. And therapists are trained, for the most part, and for the most part are good about this, to deal with those kinds of conflicts. Now, you don't want to abuse your therapist because that's not nice, but you can say, you know what, something you said last session, it hurt my feelings, made me angry, and I just want to tell you what that is. That is a wonderful opportunity for therapy to progress. It's a wonderful opportunity for you as a client to be heard and to have a voice and to have some reparative relationship work, some corrective emotional experiences. If you told some random person, hey, you know what you said was racist, I don't like it, then in all likelihood, they're going to get defensive and it's not going to be a positive experience. You tell your therapist this, most of the time, they're going to respond therapeutically. They're going to apologize. They're going to be warm about it. And they'll check in about it later on. They'll say something. They'll say, oh, I'm sorry, did I say something again that hurt your feelings? Because I know that I, as a therapist, am not perfect and sometimes I make mistakes and I just want to check in with that. That's a wonderful corrective experience to have for us when, as clients, when we go through those experiences, we learn that we can trust people and that we deserve to be heard. And that when we have a complaint, that we can say them and it won't ruin the world. That you can tell someone, hey, I didn't like it when you did that. And the other person can say, oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for telling me. I'll try not to do that. That simple interaction is for some people, for many people, such a rare interaction. It happens in couples all the time. One of the things that I often will focus on in my marital therapy is I call them requests. I'm guessing other authors probably refer to it as that too. But what I say is in a relationship, there needs to be the capacity to process requests from both person. Requests like, hey, could I request that you not pick me up late from work every day because it kind of hurts my feelings because it kind of feels like you don't care about making me wait. Or could I request that when I come home after work that you give me about 20 minutes to cool off and then we can interact after I just need some dead time after I get home from work. I can't really just jump right into things. Can I make that request? Now, the request doesn't have to be honored or doesn't have to be, you don't have to comply with the request. That's not the point. The point is that the other person receiving the request needs to hear it, understand it, validate it, and respect it to the degree that they can. And if they can accommodate it, then accommodate it. And if they can't, then apologize and say, no, I can't really accommodate that because of this. Or can we negotiate here on that? What I find that in a lot of marriages, because the requests don't go well, people in marriages just stop requesting things of each other. And when you have a situation like that, the relationship stagnates and becomes extremely negative. If you can't ask your partner a simple question like, hey, can you give me a break on A, B, or C? Then how can you function in a how can that relationship thrive? So that's something I work with a lot of people on. And this sort of thing with what the patron is talking about is along those lines. If you can't tell your therapist, hey, that thing you said last week hurt my feelings as an Asian American. If you can't say that and have that be heard and have that be honored and processed and respected, then what kind of therapeutic relationship are you in? The relationship is not safe. It's not quality. And it's a good way to test your therapist to some extent. If you bring that up with a therapist and they respond in a inadequate way and don't pay it enough attention, then you might know something about the potential of this relationship, that it's not going to necessarily get any better. Now, again, as a therapist, it's not your job to know everything or to never hurt someone's feelings. But if it happens, you have to respond in a appropriately respectable way. You have to gauge the client's intensity. You have to gauge how your response to them affects them. You might want to check in, you know, hey, a couple weeks ago we talked about this and I've been thinking about it. I just wanted to bring it up and see how you were doing with that and what your thoughts were, because it's never my intention to hurt your feelings, and sometimes I make mistakes. So anyway, all right, well, that was an interesting jag that I went on. What am I going to call this episode? I didn't realize I was going to talk about this. I guess I'll say microaggressions in therapy. Maybe I'll call it that. All right, so please become a patron of the podcast, people. You might have to actually go to your computer, become a patron of the podcast. Let me thank our most recent patrons. We have patron Autumn. Well, that's a nice name, Autumn. Jessica, Jana, Ingrid, Shauna, Gabrielle, Jennifer, Jeanette, Pixelbender. I'm guessing that's not your real name, Pixelbender. Robert, Monica, Anne, Daniel, Sid. Thank you so much for becoming patrons. If you haven't already become a patron, please do so. Well, that does it for another episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining me out there. And please take care of yourself, because you deserve it.